Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Touchdown, Indy! Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop!
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Hey, everybody. Welcome aboard. How are you doing? How's your day going? Appreciate you being with us on this Thursday. As we continue to roll through the week, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, Jim Coyle with you as always. Looking forward to being joined by Dustin Schutte, Matt Taylor, Coach Griff will join as well. Has plenty to get to as we continue this, as we head towards the weekend. Actually, we're basically here with the football tonight, really. I guess, let's see, pull that up. Yeah, there's always, you've always got some Thursday night action. Now, you can't waste an opportunity to get a game on TV. But, there we go. Schedule for college football tonight. Ooh, James Madison and Kennesaw State. How about them actions? No, that's Utah and Kennesaw State. James Madison takes on. Didn't that already happen? Yeah, that was Tuesday. Then we had Wednesday games. Tonight, you've got Coastal Carolina hosting Marshall and Texas San Antonio hosting Tulane. Tulane's coach, one of those names that might be batted around. Coach Griff joining us.
Hey.
Just talking about tonight's football action. Tulane, one of those teams whose coach, his name is one of those that you're going to hear in this coaching circle that's just going to be wild because there are so many stinking openings that it's just going to create this big vacuum. Who's going to fill their shoes? It's just like, okay, everybody's firing their coach, but who are you going to get?
Yeah.
Who are you going to get to do better, to be better?
Yeah. Well, this could be a big opportunity for some G5 school head coaches. I think you just mentioned one there from Tulane, Summerall, I think is his name. But I would look at those guys that have been in, you know, kind of the Cignetti aspect of things, winner, proven winner. Program developer type of guys that some of these schools will look at. And that's not even including what other possible group of five schools potentially could open. And this would be a great year for
JMU, James Madison. That's another one continues, as David pointed out, continues to do well.
Well, he's mentioned as well for the Virginia Tech job. And if JMU opens, you got to believe that Brian Haynes and or Mike Shanahan will be on their list of possible candidates to fill that position, as well as other potential jobs that may open. And even some of those lower P4 schools may look at a coordinator from a school as well. You know, you got like Oklahoma State and Oregon State. You know, those type of jobs that may not be the flashy of job on the market, but those have a tendency to draw the up and coming coordinators that have shown to, you know, put some numbers on the board. And you couldn't disagree with what either one of those two guys have done at Indiana when it comes to statistical data that backs up the play of their, you know, each side of the ball. So those
you
guys
might have
could
to
be.
Come out of retirement, man.
I may have to. Be a good year too.
Hey,
I tell you, with what
and get me a job so I can get fired and
walk out the
be
door.
Paid.
Walk out the door. Paid. Well, how about Louisiana State, LSU, with Brian Kelly, and the governor is the one that got involved in that decision, and he's taking the hiring of the next head coach out of the hands of the AD, Scott Woodward. So you think that, you know, he's not on the chopping block? I guarantee it.
I'm so grateful of my time, fellas. You. That was my opportunity. You know, coaches got a shelf. Some coaches got 50 years. Some coaches got 12. Mine was 6. Good. I got to tell you, we had a meeting. Say, coach, things are not going well. No shit. Ray Charles can see that, brother. And they were good. And Scott Woodward is a friend of mine today. Really, really, a lot of respect for the way they handled me.
So what's next?
Well, I gotta tell you this, though. Say, coach, you got $17.1 million on your contract. We're going to give it to you. I said, what time you want me to leave? What door you want me out of, brother?
That's still the best. He's the best at any storytelling you can be. I mean, he would hold court at the AFC coaches.
That was Ed Edgeron, by the way, for the former LSU coach.
You know, he would hold court when we were at the American Football Coaches Association National Convention. And you're talking to a guy that could draw a crowd storytelling. He was that guy. But that's the interesting part about LSU is that this governor is overly involved in this whole process, which is to me would be a big alarm in that respect, because why would a governor worry about a college football team when he's got more problems on his plate to deal with in the state of Louisiana than whether or not the Tigers are winning on Saturday night in Baton Rouge? But that one, that one gets a little trickier now, because I'm not sure there's too many guys out there going to look at that and go, wait a minute. You fired the head coach as the governor. You pulled the hiring of the next head coach out of the hands of Scott Woodward, which tells me he's out the door. And I'm sure there's no, granted, I'm saying this with a little tongue in cheek, because there'll be too many dollar signs in front of it not to take it. It's an interesting year. It was a light year last year when it came to available head coaching positions. So this year's making up for what last year's lacked. And it's going to be interesting. It's good that Indiana locked up Mr. Cignetti and, you know, Scott Dolson's forward thinking, because he kind of knew what was coming down the pipe with some of the ones that already started, not to mention what else would be available. And
yeah,
that to me was the smartest hire again.
We've got to take a break. Dustin Schutte's going to join us next. Fozan, how about them Blue Jays, man? They were rolling on. They take the 3-2 lead in the World Series. Give Shohei Ohtani his first loss. But we've got more coming up. Thanks a lot for being with us. Back with it. And much more after these messages. Oh, man, I was all ready.
There it is.
Coming down the tracks. Boiler up, baby. The conductor, Dustin Schutte from Purdue or Boiler SI. Which one is it? How you say it?
Purdue on SI.
Welcome aboard. How's it going, brother?
I'm doing well, Jim. How are you?
Doing okay. Would be better if we were going to get to have you for the whole day with Matt Taylor and everything, but we'll take the loveliness that we can get while we can get it. How's everything going with you, sir?
Doing well. I mean, we're now into full-on basketball mode. Purdue's had 2 exhibitions now, played Kentucky on Friday, played UND last night, and so the real thing begins on Tuesday. So, and then next week, I mean, You got women's basketball on Monday, Thursday, men's basketball Tuesday, Friday, volleyball Friday, Saturday, football Saturday. Going to be a crazy week for me. I'll be all around the joint on Purdue's campus.
Yeah, I hear you, man. It's that time of year, double duty going on. What was your take from the Kentucky-Purdue game?
So in that game, I think it was two of the things Purdue wanted to address in the offseason was their defense and then primarily their rebounding. That was the big reason why they went to the transfer portal and got Oscar Clough. Didn't shoot the ball particularly well in Rupp Arena against Kentucky. I think they were about 38.5% from the floor. Just made 3 of 17. So obviously that's going to tilt the rebounding in Kentucky's favor. But they were out rebounded in that game by 12. And that was a reason why they lost several of the games that maybe they should have won last season. They struggled a lot with Kentucky's athleticism, especially when they were able to get out in transition. So I think that it highlighted some of the concerns that Purdue still has. Now, the one thing I'll say is that Matt Painter does not scout those games. Some teams choose to, some teams choose not to. He's one that does not, you know, go into a deep dive or really any type of dive into this. It's just solely focused on what can Purdue do to improve itself. And you saw some of the areas where they need to grow. They still need to grow on the glass. They still need to get better defensively. So Kentucky won that game. I mean, they delivered some punches. Purdue didn't have much of an answer, but at the same time, like, there's going to be some growing pains. This is a team that still has, like, in the first two games, Oscar Clough has really struggled. And he got it going in the second half against University of Indianapolis last night, got a couple rebounds, but he's been a little bit hesitant. Looks like he's thinking too much. So, look, I still think they're going to be really good. I still think that they have a Final Four caliber talent and going to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament. But there's certainly some things that give you some concern through the first two exhibition games, I would say.
Yeah, Indiana, although they were able to get a win against Baylor, what was exposed was their rebounding ineffectiveness. Yep. They got clobbered on the boards, like 44-26 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Offensive rebounds, they gave up a ton. As a matter of fact, I think I've got it. Offensive rebounding, man. They gave up 16 offensive rebounds while getting only 4. That's a problem. Defensive rebounding, 28-21, Indiana, 44-25 total on that. But the points off and then the turnovers. Indiana, that's where they made up for things. They forced 16 Baylor turnovers and turn that into 22 points while only turning the ball over 9 times. So they're making up for things for their lack of rebounding right now because of their size. But that's something you don't want to chase all year. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. You want to shore up some of those things. and again, I don't know how much Indiana prepped for that game. I don't know how much they scouted. Right. Baylor for that. So you don't really know. And again, this is
how can you scout? It's hard to scout. Right. Hell, they all have new players.
I was going to say, you can't do it anymore. So it's a good learning opportunity. But I think Indiana is a team that is bringing in a lot of new pieces. And I think the biggest thing on the Purdue side is Oscar Clough and Trey Kaufman-Wren learning to play together. Last year, Trey Kaufman-Wren was primarily the 5. And so he had the floor open to himself to go to work. There was no cluster. Clough is a guy who plays in the low post. He can be a little bit more athletic, so he can move kind of like Caleb First could, but primarily he's going to be on the block. So you're shortening the floor almost and giving Trey Kaufman-Wren less space. I think that will change throughout the season. And once they get acclimated with each other and kind of know what each other is going to do. But I think you saw some of those offensive woes because Trey Kaufman-Wren was a 60% shooter last season. And in the first two games, especially against Kentucky early, he struggled to get it going. He had some missed shots last night that I think usually go in. So it's going to be interesting. I think people assume that. And this is why you don't play these games on paper, right? Because you look at the talent and I'm not trying to call anybody out here, but I think that Indiana, when you look at their talent in the past couple seasons on a roster standpoint, you would look and say that's a team that should get to the Sweet 16. But that's why you don't play the games on paper, because there are going to be some growing pains. I think people thought that with the roster assembly that it just automatically clicks right away, and that's not how it works. Like, it's going to take time. So, and Purdue's got a Purdue's lost these exhibition games 2 years in a row now. They lost to Arkansas before they went to the Final Four. They lost to Creighton last year. So who really knows? But Purdue's going to have some tough early tests. They go to Alabama in the second week of the season. Then they'll play in the Baja Mar, where they could see Texas Tech. They'll play a good Memphis team. Then they'll have Marquette, Iowa State, Auburn. I think there might be another one in there that I'm missing. But they're going to be tested quite a bit this season. So we'll find out pretty, I don't want to say pretty quickly because it's a long season, but they're not just going to walk in and dominate everybody on every single night. And I think some people probably expected that. Just not going to be the case. There are going to be some growing pains, guys learning to play with each other. But I do think in the long run, they've got all the pieces necessary to make a deep run.
Yeah, I still have my doubts about Purdue being at the top of definitely not the number one team in the country, I don't think. But, hey, we never know how good a team is going to get. Because I just like to use football as an example. Hey, you just got to let them play, man, because you don't know who's going to do what. You don't know what pieces are going to click. It obviously – look back at the football season. The first games the teams play, not very good. They're just not good yet. You're not in sync yet. And all of that stuff has to come together. You just mentioned learning to play with each other. There's just a lot of things that goes in. And that's why they play all of these non-conference games up before they get into conference play. These are all, for the most part, supposed to be tune-up games. And that's why you see them playing Alabama, A&M, and whomever else, we're talking about, mixed in with some tough teams, because you need a little bit to get ready for Indiana. It's Louisville, Kentucky, Marquette on that schedule before they get into Big Ten play. But, yeah, we'll find out who is what. I still think Michigan is going to be the team in the Big Ten to look out for, although they're having troubles with turning the ball over right now. Mm-hmm. They have just couldn't hold on to that ball with a handle.
Well, that was their problem last year, especially early in the season. I mean, I think at one point they were averaging like 16 turnovers a game. Now, they obviously got it together, and their style of play kind of allowed them to overcome some of that. They were really, I can't remember, but I think they were a really good rebounding team. But anyway, I think Michigan's going to be a really good team. I think Illinois is always – Brad Underwood has always established them as a top-tier team. I think Iowa is a team that's probably going to be near the – well, I don't want to say probably near the top. I'm interested to see what Iowa does. That's going to be a completely different style of play. Yeah.
But why do you think they'll be so good already?
I just think the way Ben McCollum coaches, I think – Bennett Sturts is probably the, I don't know if I want to say second best guard, but he may be the third best point guard in the Big Ten. Excuse me. So I think they have some interesting pieces. I'm not saying they're going to win the Big Ten, but I think they could be a top five team in that league, along with Purdue, Michigan, Illinois, and Michigan State, whoever else you want to throw in there. Indiana could be in the conversation. UCLA could be in the conversation.
Yeah, I don't expect Indiana to be in that conversation of the top five at all. The lower five, maybe, but not that top
really?
Five. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what Indiana's going to do, to be honest with you. I know what they have, but I don't know what everybody else has. And it's too hard now. Back in the old days.
That's true.
Back in the old days. You knew what teams had. You knew what they were going to be like. You had a pretty good understanding and idea. Now you don't. Now, Purdue is one of the teams that you kind of do know. You have the at least the best understanding, but even they have additions that are going to change that team in a way that you're not sure quite how it's going to work. So, yeah, I think that Indiana is in the lower five of the upper 10 of the Big Ten, but I don't. I think Michigan is going to be at the top. And then I don't know between UCLA, Michigan State, Illinois, Purdue.
I
don't know amongst those teams who is really going to be fighting for the top spot.
Washington's another team to keep an eye on. They have the two, and I'm going to forget their name, Desmond Claude, I believe, transferred from USC to Washington, and then the freshman, Yancey, I believe, also transferred to Washington. So, like, they could be, again, maybe not a contender at the top of the Big Ten, but they're going to be a team that takes a big jump. They didn't make the Big Ten tournament last year. So, I mean, who knows what to expect, right? Like, we've seen seasons where you don't expect much from certain teams, and they give you something to cheer about or something that interests you. So, who knows? Like, all it takes is sometimes that one right piece to get things on the right track, and who knows who's going to press the right buttons. But I think the Big Ten is going to be really tough this season. I mean, it's tough every year, but I feel like this is going to be one of the better years for the conference, especially I think there's a lot of really good teams out there.
I agree. And you never know who's who and who's going to be that team. Matt Painter, man, it's not pressure. Pressure's not the right word, but win the national championship, this is kind of, I don't want to say it's his last chance at it, but this is the last run with this band. The band has been together for a while, you know, for 4 or 5 years now, and they've had this, been on this great run. And again, I don't think it's pressure, but they're to win the national championship, it's kind of got to be pressing for him and Purdue to get that done this year.
Yeah, I think you can use the word pressure because that's the expectation they put for themselves. Like, they wrote the word national champions on the whiteboard. That's their motivation. That was their motivation all summer. That was their motivation in practice. It's going to continue to fuel their fire. But that doesn't mean that you, just because you have experience and you've been good the last couple of years, doesn't mean squat. Like, as Matt Painter always says, you start over every season. You're 0-0, and you got to take it one game at a time. So I do think it's pressure. Now, the one thing that they are beneficiaries of, particularly with Trey Kaufman-Wren, Fletcher Lawyer, and Braden Smith, is that those three guys have been through everything. They know if you don't take it seriously, what can happen, right? You get bounced by a 16 seed in the first round of the NCAA tournament. They know what it takes to get to the national championship game. They've been there. Last year, they were a bucket away, even though they weren't the best. I think they finished with a 6th seed in the Big Ten. They were one bad call and one defensive lapse away from getting to the Elite Eight and playing Tennessee for a shot at the Final Four. So this is a group that's been through it all. They have the national championship expectation. It's not like they're just going to get to midway through the season and say, hey, we think we're good enough to get to the Final Four, and then they start to feel the pressure. This is the goal from the start of the season. So I think it's fair. And look, Matt Painter's even said, he was asked by some of the guys at the Field of 68, like, is this the best team you've had? Is this the best chance you've had to win a national title? And he said, yeah, I think that because of the depth we have, because of the talent on our roster, because of the experience we bring back, this is our best chance that since I've been here to win a national championship. So this isn't like, they know what the expectation is, but there's also a belief or an understanding that if they don't get it done, like, the program's not going to crumble tomorrow. You just go back to work, you get back on the recruiting trail, and you try to do it again. So I don't think, I actually wrote about this the other day. I don't think it's now or never, because the NCAA tournament, Jim, is such a crapshoot. Like, we've seen low seeded teams get to the Final Four. That UConn team, I think, was a 4 or 5 seed in like in 2011 or 12, whenever they went on their magical run. You've seen VCU, George Mason, Loyola Chicago get to a Final Four. You just never know what's going to happen. So I never say now or never when it comes to college basketball, because it's just, sometimes it's luck of the draw. But in terms of their best chance, I still think that this is their second best chance, because I still think that team that returned Edie, Mason Gillis, Braden Smith, Fletcher Lawyer, brought in Lance Jones, I think that was their best team. But we'll see. there's a long season ahead, and maybe after a few games, this team will change my mind, but maybe they'll outplay that Zach Edey 23-24 team that made it to the national championship game.
We'll certainly see this weekend. The Boilers travel to Ann Arbor to play in the Big House. The football season that I thought was going to be so much better for Purdue this year, although they have played better. They have looked so much better. Their win total is going to be a whopping one more, maybe, than last season. Yeah. And I was surprised. I thought that they were going to win some games. But Northwestern got better. Rutgers was better than I thought they were going to be. So, tough sledding for Purdue right now, and it's not going to get any easier as they travel to number 21 Michigan, who is looking to stay on track to potentially land in the college football playoffs.
Yeah, there's a good chance that I think Washington's really good too, so there's a chance that they could play four ranked opponents in their final four games. Indiana, yes. Number two, Ohio State, number one, Michigan, 21, Washington, not ranked, but that's fraudulent.
Washington should be ranked, yes.
Correct. Look, Purdue has played better. I think they are much better than they were a season. I think they're competing at a higher level than they were a season ago. I don't know in terms of the talent if they're better, but what I would say is they also have blown two of those games. They were up seven late in the fourth quarter against Minnesota. They should have won that game. Pick six late in the game. And then last week had a 10-point lead in the third quarter against Rutgers. Late fumble, trying to do too much, and Rutgers kicks a game-winning field goal. I would even say, Jim, they kind of blew the USC game. Now, that was a 33-17, but they had three interceptions, including a pick six in the red zone. Even if you wipe out that pick six, I think it's a different football game. So you've gone from potentially winning at the very least four games, going 4-8. I think that would have been a major improvement from last season to now. You may go 0-18 in the Big Ten the last 2 years. You may be 3-21. Haven't beat a Power Four team since Indiana in 2023. Like it's some ugly stats, and the only reason I bring that up is because it makes it a lot harder for Barry Odom to go out on the recruiting trail or in the transfer portal and make a pitch. If you won a few games, you can say, "Hey, look at what we're building here." And I think that there are some positives you can point to, but man, it's going to be a tough sell if they can't. And I don't know that they're. I think they're staring 0-9 in the Big Ten in a 2-10 season right in the face unless they are able to create some level of magic here in the final four games, which, considering their schedule, as you mentioned, seems unlikely at this point.
Yeah, and like I said, I thought that that was going to be different, but it's not that Purdue didn't get better. They did. They looked a lot better, played a lot better, but so did everybody else, unfortunately. Yeah. And that was the thing that I did not that's not part of the equation I included, unfortunately, as Rutgers, like I said, better, Northwestern better. Hell, Northwestern went to Penn State and beat the Nittany Lions, who now travel to the Shoe this weekend to take on Ohio State in what was a gigantic matchup of could have been a number one, number two matchup. But, that fell by the wayside. So we'll see how that works out. Rutgers goes to Illinois. Indiana's at Maryland's, but let's see, UCLA at Nebraska, or USC rather, at Nebraska. That's a team, that's a game right there that is that is on NBC, and that's a CFP defining deal for one of those two. Whoever loses that is out of the CFP race for certain.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yep. You gotta win this game I think you always now if you're in the SEC or Big Ten, if you can get to 10 wins, that gives you a chance. If you can just hit that 10-win mark, you're going to give yourself a chance and put yourself in position. Doesn't mean you're going to make it, but you're at least going to be in the conversation. So, yes, if the winner of that game is still in the mix, the loser is just looking at postseason play, which isn't a bad thing. But I think, especially with USC, they've got to be getting a little tired of not being in the playoff conversation with Lincoln Riley, who was expected to be there every single year, at least in the conversation, at least in the picture.
Yeah, with all these coaching firings, and I'm not suggesting at all that USC should do that, but USC has far from lived up to its expectations year over year. I mean, they haven't, I guess maybe they've improved. It's hard to tell, But they should be in this top end. They should be up there with Indiana and Ohio State. That's something that I've talked about. The Big Ten has got to get better. They have to get better. They are actually getting better. But the thing is, we don't really know how good they are. Like Washington. I think Washington's a pretty damn good team. I know you.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
And I would actually like to see them against one of these SEC mid teams to get an idea, because it's all perception. Everybody thinks that these teams are better. Why? What have they done outside of – it's still this bias that's going to go on. Even 100%. Though last year we had Michigan beating Alabama and whatnot, it's going to have to happen again. That's exactly what is going to have to happen again. And it would be incredible to see the Big Ten win another national championship for the third year in a row with the third different team. That would be something to give to the SEC to put in their pipe and smoke it.
Yeah, well, I mean, how
Paul Feinbaum.
There you go. Well, how many times did the SEC were they propped up by Alabama? So even if you don't get a new team to win it, even if it is Ohio State,
about 9 years.
And yeah, so like even if it is Ohio, like the Big Ten still is. I still think the Big Ten. I think they have it right. The Big Ten has the two best teams in college football right now. Whether that's Ohio State, Indiana, or Indiana, Ohio State, I don't know. We'll probably find out in the Big Ten championship game, but. They've gotten that right. And it's all preseason perception. This is why, Jim, week one or week two, we should just have a Big Ten SEC challenge and, you know, kind of set the record straight. And yeah, let's not come out with
that week one and week two, though. Teams are not worth us. They're not good then. So
let's go week three then. How's that?
That's better.
you want to do it at the end of the season?
Maybe they save it for the end of the season.
There you go.
Well, because the SEC is always playing those they play all of their non-con games. They all usually have a non-con game toward the end of the season. Weird. It's like getting a bye. Maybe it's like taking a bye week.
That's exactly why they do it. It's because so that way, especially now, it's more beneficial because you have more teams. But if you were Alabama and you play Mercer in that second to last week, that's essentially about you're going to have your starters on the bench, so you give them a few drives, and then you bring in your second stringers and third stringers to finish up the game. So you avoid injury, you get your guys some much needed time off. I would, if I'm the Big Ten, Big Ten teams should look into doing that more if they want a deeper playoff run, because you essentially build yourself in there a third bye week.
Yeah, I agree, man. Hey, all right, so I know you got to run today, unfortunately. Yep. We'd love for you to stick around. What's next for you?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'll just kind of getting through this weekend, getting through the Purdue-Michigan football game, and then next week we've got a lot of coverage of the men's, women's basketball, volleyball, and then the Purdue will host Ohio State on the football field. So a lot of good stuff coming up. Purdue on SI is where you can catch all of it if you are interested.
Absolutely. If you're a Boiler fan, make sure you're giving Dustin a follow. And no matter what, give him a follow anyway. He's a good dude. We appreciate him. He's part of the fam. He's on with us. Normally, we're going to have him on more as we get going throughout the season when it's ever beneficial for him. But appreciate you, my friend.
Thanks, Jim. Have a good one.
Dustin Schutte joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. We've got more coming up. Glad to have you along for the ride. We're back with plenty more after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate you. No matter how you're finding us, whether it's on one of our great radio stations like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref in Evansville, always the right call, or up in the region on the Voice of the Region, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB, and on Fort Wayne's only sports station, 1380 The Fan. Keep it locked on these stations throughout the day. And if you're following on social media, please hit the subscribe and like button. It really benefits us for the show. It matters a lot. And be sure to subscribe to the Hoosier.com NFL.com on three today. Not only do you get the most in-depth coverage of Indiana Athletics news and recruiting information, right now you get it for 50% off and you get a free subscription to The Athletic. But wait, there's more. You subscribe now, between now and November 30th, your name will go into a drawing for a, what is it, beautiful embroidered Adidas jacket.
Now that's
with
sweet.
With the Hoosier.com on three on it.
Yeah,
that's the jacket. These are nice.
Yeah, that's the one I need multiple entries on.
These are some sweet daddies, man. I'm telling you. But, yep, that's all it takes, man. So, hey, welcome back. What's up, man? We've got another football weekend coming. Penn State goes to Ohio State. Everyone expecting that to be a beatdown with what has happened to Penn State. This could be ugly, but I don't know. We don't know what Penn State's going to look like.
Well, Penn State is still a good team, but is in disarray. That's the thing with them right now is, the firing of Franklin, the losing the three games in a row, whatever that has taken its toll, losing Allmeyer. That hurt them because the guy playing with a backup quarterback, but they still their backup have.
How about this? Drew Altmeyer and their former backup, Bo Pribula.
Yeah, both are out.
Out with injuries. Bo, where did he end up?
He was at Missouri. He's the one
Missouri,
that
yes.
He had to leave in the middle of the playoff run because of the portal, and he went to Missouri. And he got hurt this past weekend, and it was an ugly injury. I mean, it was just ugly. And, he's now lost for the year for Mizzou, who had been playing pretty decently. Now they lose him, and now their stock has kind of dropped a little bit. But, I just think the Penn State team has still got the athletes that they had when they started the year. They've had a bye week, which has been so beneficial for that whole organization because it's of everything that's transpired, and it's time to take a collective breath and push forward. I mean, they lost to Iowa by one in Iowa City, and we all know how hard it is to win in Iowa City, and from that standpoint, so. Yeah, I still think they're a big concern in the Big Ten. I still think they may have a say, ultimately, who's going to play, in the championship game to a certain degree. Indiana still has to play them at Penn State, which is never an easy place to play. And as you said, and we've said, now that Indiana is the hunted, they're going to come in there with a huge bullseye, just like they are heading to Maryland this weekend.
Yeah, and Maryland's a good team. They've got I know when I say that people are going, yeah, whatever. They've lost three in a row. Cignetti pointed out, they've got 22 sacks on the year while only giving up two sacks. They only give up 17 points a game, but and you go on the road, it's always tough. Mm-hmm. So, but I still, when Indiana arrives and plays their brand of football, it's just, you can't stop them. They're a machine. They do things the way they're supposed to do. They're not beating themselves. They're not getting penalties that are killing themselves. And I expect the same in College Park. I just think that Indiana is just that good. And they are playing at a level to where they don't play down to their opponents. They just do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, they're, like I said, they're, playing the brand that Cignetti wants them to play, which is focusing on the here and now and not worrying about what happened and what may happen in the future. He's kind of referenced the tear off the rear view mirror, and they got to have their focus each and every week. They're going to have to bring their A game every week. They are not good enough to play any team, not at their peak. Still, I just don't think they can do that and get by. with a game that's not, you know, at the point of where, like you just discussed. But, you know, the thing about Maryland is watching them, the Malik Washington kid, the freshman, he's going to be a phenomenal player in the Big Ten. I would be, any defensive coordinator in the Big Ten is going to be concerned playing Maryland for the next 3 years, because that kid is going to be a superstar. I mean, he's 6'5", he's 230 pounds. He can run it and he can throw it. But he's a freshman, so he makes freshman mistakes in that respect. So that's the one thing that's kind of hurt them offensively, is some of his growing pains that you get with a true freshman in there. The thing that Maryland has in the positive column this week, they had a bye week last week. So they've had 2 weeks to prepare for Indiana. That is always a concern for a coach, because when you give a team 2 weeks to really prepare for you, it's a, you know, they're going to take everything they have. They're going to, you know, they're going to put everything under a microscope and find ways where your weaknesses are. And if you're not addressing them, they're going to find them, because they've had 2 weeks to look at you. So that's always a positive in my mindset, is when a team has 2 weeks to prepare for you, it's a tough toll, especially on the road and at a stadium that Indiana really hasn't played great in at all over the years. And so we're going to find out Saturday at 3:30 on this one, because of it's going to be a heck of a ball game. But you're correct, Maryland is a team that can play a spoiler just as good as anybody.
Yeah, and we've seen it happen. Would not like to see that happen now, just because of what all is on the line. But I just feel that this team is ready to play when they get anywhere. Mm-hmm. They stay there. Cignetti does a great job with that. They have the great mindset of one step at a time, one game at a time. They are all in. Every player down to the managers are bought in on that. And I think that is part of what is going to make this season so special, and why they're able to do what they're able to do, mm-hmm. because they have that mentality, and they maintain it. But other games going on in the Big Ten as well. Penn State traveling to Ohio State, like I said. Can they play the spoiler? I'm not sure. We'll find out. Rutgers at Illinois. Mm-hmm. It is a good one, but Illinois coming off of a loss, they're going to win this game. I think personally, they're a 12.5 point favorite, which is that's a pretty juicy line. But Michigan State goes to Minnesota. Now, I think Minnesota will probably win that game.
Yeah,
but they're only a 3.5 point favorite.
Yeah, Jonathan Smith is just—I don't know—just snake bitten or something, because they just
doesn't look like a, I got to be honest with you. Whenever I see a picture of him, he looks like a little kid that is the first day of school and he's not sure where his class is.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of how they're playing. You know, they're kind of wandering around at times, and I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see if they are patient enough their second year in East Lansing. I mean, they've all but written him off in the papers up there. I mean, it's, you know, a non-issue in the minds of the media that he's done. But I got to think they're going to give him one more year, but we'll see.
I don't know. Well, speaking of one more year, USC at Nebraska, this is a CFP-defining game. The loser of this game is out of that for sure. But it also, Matt Rhule and Lincoln Riley, both of these coaches have underperformed, and neither are going to be fired. And I think a big part of that is because of all the firings that's already happened. These teams are going to have so much trouble. Who's going to go where? I mean, Russell's posting here that Marcus Freeman reacts to LSU firing. Brian Kelly reportedly declines advances from Penn State and Florida.
He's not going to leave.
I didn't think he was leaving Notre Dame. I didn't think Kurt Cignetti was leaving.
Yeah, USC is still viewed as one of the premier jobs in the country. So if they decide to part ways with Riley,
yeah, they're not going to.
And it's still one of those jobs, but whether they do or not, we'll see. But
But Penn State is who's Penn State going to get?
Supposedly Brian Hartline is the quote unquote the leader at this point. There's been a lot of discussion. Now he's the OC at Ohio State, which I'm not quite sure why they feel that is the direction to go, especially at Penn State, because you would think they would try to get a proven head coach, a la Cignetti. Not, you know, in that regard, but from the chatter that I've heard is Hartline has kind of emerged as the guy. Now, whether that's smoke and mirrors and Matt Rhule is still in the crosshairs of that AD because of their previous relationship, we'll see. I'll tell you, Washington's, you talked about Washington. I'm not sure who they play this week, but there's a team that I think is pretty darn good. I mean,
very good.
They Jet look fish. Really
Jeff Fish has really done good. A hell of a job coming up from, where'd he come up? Arizona
State? Arizona. And he did a heck of a job there. And yeah. Remember, he got in late that first year. So this is truly his really first full year of recruiting and things of that nature. The quarterback they have is outstanding. And, they hammered Illinois, kind of like Indiana did. Now, they didn't put up as many points, but Illinois really just couldn't do anything against Washington. So, you know, there's a job that, hey, look, 3 years ago, wasn't it? They were in the national championship game, and that's before, you know, that's when Kellen was there. So it's not to sit here and say that they couldn't make a reappearance in the national landscape under Jed Fish. And they're kind of being forgotten out west there because, you know, they didn't have a great year last year, but I do think they're a really good Big Ten team, you know, and kind of like USC's, I still think it's a pretty good Big Ten team, and we're going to find out. But Washington is the team that I would keep an eye on in that respect.
I think Penn State should look at guys like Jeff Brohm, Jed Fish from Washington.
Yeah.
The guys that have a proven track record, and not only that, Jeff Brohm would be attractive because I think he's 4-4 in games in top games against top two teams or something like that, as opposed to that 1-12 90.
Yeah, whatever. Well, look at Brohm. They beat Louisville.
Hey, we got to take a break.
Oh, okay. I was going to say Louisville. You know, they've been down to Miami and beat.
Oh, yeah. Hey, he's proven he can do it, man. And they've got to get somebody, and they have to get somebody that can win. Hey, we've got tons more coming up here at Indiana Sports B Radio. Jim Coyle with you. Coach Griff is with us. And Matt Taylor from the Colts joins us next. I wonder if Matt's going to get any of the earsay collection. We'll talk about that. Going up for auction. I mean, we're talking some incredible world-renowned pieces of music, instruments and books, and it covers so many different facets of life. Maybe the greatest collection in the world of its kind, it's a cornucopia of stuff. So back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages.
If you're looking for a new home in the Indianapolis area, you need Cheryl Sizemore from Brick and Ivy Realty. Cheryl Sizemore has over two decades of experience, and that could be the difference in getting the home you want in today's tough housing market. Reach out to Cheryl at CherylSizemoreSells@gmail.com or 317-701-0838. That's 317-701-0838. Let Cheryl Sizemore sell or find your new home today.
When it comes to apparel and promotions, Freethink has you covered, literally, whether it's 24 or 200 shirts for sports leagues, businesses, or groups. Freethink Apparel and Promotions can also create your very own merchandising store. Freethink Apparel and Promotions did it for Indiana Sports Beat Radio, and they can do it for you. Whether it's screen printing, embroidery, digital printing, promotional products, vehicle wraps, or anything else under the promotional line. See what Freethink Apparel and Promotions can do for you at freethinkapparel.com.
Huddle up, football fans. Tailgate season is here, and nobody gets you ready for game day like Academy Sports and Outdoors. Swing by your local Academy store or shop online at academy.com to find everything you need, from grills to jerseys and more. Be a watch party legend with gear from top brands like Nike and Under Armour, all at unbeatable prices every day. With 8 Academy stores across Indiana, including our Bloomington location, fun can't lose, and neither can you. Gear up today at Academy Sports and Outdoors.
Whether it's a night out with the family, after work with colleagues, or catching the game with friends, Bubba's 33 is the place for you. Bubba's 33 offers a mouthwatering menu of selections that are all made from scratch every day. The portions are big, but the prices are small. And with over 50 big screen TVs, you'll never miss the big game. Bubba's 33, pizza, burgers, beer.
Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Thursday. Jim Coyle here, Coach Griff with us, and joined by Matt Taylor, the voice of the Indianapolis Colts. How are you, sir?
What's going on, guys? How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Just enjoying this football season all the way around, whether it's college, the NFL. It's been a great time for people from the state of Indiana, for certain, with the Hoosiers doing well, the Colts killing it. We're looking at a possibility, and I know this is crazy, but I talked about this on another show yesterday, Matt. Indiana could win the Big Ten title. That's not a stretch. They could have a Heisman Trophy winner.
I know.
Not a stretch. They could win the national championship. Not a stretch. And the Colts could win the Super Bowl all in the same year. I know that that's a stretch for all of that to happen, but none of it is a stretch to happen.
Well, none of it is like you, to your point, none of it is without the, it's not out of the realm of possibility based on how well they're playing right now, you know, both instances, and, you know, just the level of belief and confidence that you have in both going forward. I mean, the Colts are 7-1, and I can speak more authoritatively on them. But I don't see a game on their schedule the rest of the way that scares me. I really don't. And I know the schedule, just in terms of geography, is going to heat up here, because you've got a couple of games, you know, that are kind of tricky in terms of environment. You know, Berlin is a tricky environment. Pittsburgh's a tricky environment. Kansas City, Seattle. But, you know, the teams in which they play in those environments don't scare me. They're all very beatable. I'm not saying the Colts aren't beatable, but again, long story short, there's just not a game on the schedule that I look at and say, the Colts don't have a chance to win that one, based on the opponent and based on the stadium that the game's being played in. So, I mean, 6 of your last 9 games of the season are on the road, plus a long trip coming up, like I said, coming up next week. Believe it or not, it's here already, you know, that trip to Berlin. But the Colts are just, I mean, they're a juggernaut on offense. Defensively, they're working through some things, but they're still holding the point total down to under 20 points, which at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. Nothing else really matters other than the points you give up. So it's a really exciting time right now to watch high-level football on Saturdays, and same thing on Sundays with the Colts.
Yeah, and this weekend, the Colts get the opportunity to continue that as a trip to Pittsburgh to take on Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers, a traditionally good team. But, man, the Colts, they're a 3.5-point favorite on the road.
Yeah, how crazy is that? I mean, listen, that I think speaks to just how well they're playing. I mean, Pittsburgh's 4-3. They've lost back-to-back games, but because of how bad the AFC North is right now, they still lead that division. You know, Pittsburgh, it's weird. I call them like a neutral team, neutral in the sense that they've scored 175 points on the season, but they've also allowed 175 points on the season. So their point differential is exactly zero. And everybody else in that division in the AFC North has a negative point differential. So that's why I still think they're leading that division. Defensively, they're a head scratcher, because they've got household names in all three levels of that defense. But yet statistically, they're one of the worst defenses in the league. They ranked dead last in passing defense. Last week, they gave up 360 to Jordan Love. The week before that, they let a 41-year-old Joe Flacco torch him. So it's just, it's kind of a head scratcher, but here's the thing, like you play them there and it's still one of the best home field environments in all of sports, great fan base, the terrible towels and all of that stuff. Aaron Rodgers on the other sideline, and Rodgers is having a pretty good season. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, he looks like he's kind of turning the, you know, the hourglass back a couple of years, you know, I think he's got a 16-5 touchdown to interception ratio. His passer rating this season is over 100. Completion percentage hovering right around 70%. Like, these are all the best numbers he's had so far since he was the MVP with the Packers not that long ago in 2021. So he's still getting it done to a degree. DK Metcalf is a big play receiver. But, you know, they long story short, they still have guys on both sides of the ball that can wreck the game. But, you know, the odds makers think that the Colts are the better team. And I think objectively on paper, they are the better team, but the game is played in Pittsburgh. The Colts have only won there one time since they moved to Indianapolis in 1984. So it's a big game storyline, going into this game Sunday as it relates to just trying to, you know, prove, you know, send a message and prove a point on the road, beating a, you know, a team that's capable on their home field with, again, one of the best home field advantages behind them in this game on Sunday.
Yeah, you got to think, too, that Tyler Warren has just gotten better and better each week of the season, in my opinion. I don't know. I'm going to get your feelings on that because he seems to be becoming a primary target in the passing game. Very athletic guy. And I've seen them, it looks, or it seems to be, they have been targeting him more in the passing game.
Well, they have. And, but here's the deal about the Colts offense. It is so take what they give you and execute at such a high precise level that it doesn't matter if it's Warren going for, you know, 8 for 60 or if it's, Pittman the other day going for, you know, 9 for 95 and a touchdown. I mean, going into the game, you don't know who's going to have a semi big game for the Colts because the ball goes so many different directions based on what the defense is allowing the Colts to take. And they just take what's there and execute at such a high level. Now they take their shots too. And that certainly lightens up the defense, which is very important, but I mean, the Colts are one of the very few teams in the NFL that don't have a 100-yard receiver, and I think they like it that way. They prefer it that way, and it makes it tougher on the defense. You know, we've talked about this. I mean, if you're a defensive coordinator in the NFL, your main job when you wake up on Monday morning getting ready for a new week and a new opponent is to figure out, how do I take away the other team's best player? How do I make him play left-handed, right? I mean, that's what Bill Belichick made a career doing. If you're getting ready to play the Colts, is their best player Michael Pittman Jr.? Is it Tyler Warren? Is it, do I load up the box to slow down Jonathan Taylor? Do I heat up Daniel Jones? Well, if you heat up Daniel Jones, he's going to kill you in the passing game. If you load up the box, the other guys on the outside are going to kill you in the passing game. If you sell out to double team Pittman or Warren, you know, there's opportunities in the running game for Jonathan Taylor. So I think the Colts offense is so balanced. It is so full of skill players. So one week it might be Warren going for 6 for 80, or another week it might be Josh Downs getting a bunch of yards after the catch and some third down conversions. I mean, just whatever the case is, the Colts are so fine with just shredding you from so many different ways. And I call him Mr. High Tide. Daniel Jones, to me, he's a high tide because he lifts every boat around him. Everybody around him is better because of his presence within this offense. And he is so good pre-snap and executing in the passing game, precise accuracy. It's like a surgery every week watching this offense work. And they just slowly pick you apart. And it doesn't matter who it is. And it's a nightmare right now getting ready to play this Colts offense because of the different ways they can beat you and how many different guys they can feed the football to.
One quick question here. We got trade deadline coming up pretty soon, I believe. And do you anticipate the Colts making any moves there to strengthen their roster, or do you feel like they're okay now? And is that a possibility of moving Anthony Richardson as well, if that's their case and trying to position themselves, you know, for the draft maybe?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, we're gonna have to wait and see on it. I mean, the Colts, to your point, they haven't been in this situation at 7-1. They haven't been anywhere close to this in the regime of Chris Ballard since he's been here since 2017. So as it relates to the record and the time of year and the trade deadline coming up, we're kind of in uncharted waters right now. So it's kind of a big wait and see game. But there's definitely a window of opportunity right now. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, to what degree they'll show some urgency, we'll have to find out. But I mean, I think if you just look at the roster, I mean, two of the natural areas where, you know, you're inclined to look at are, you know, one is in the secondary. Charvarius Ward is still on IR. He's coming back, you know, relatively soon. He'll be back, you know, the middle part of this upcoming month in November. Jalen Jones has a decent shot to come back this week. Decent because I say he was a full participant in practice yesterday, and the Colts opened up his 21-day window to return off of IR last week. Last week he was a limited participant, but he hasn't played since week one with a hamstring injury, and he's been dealing with this hamstring injury since, you know, late June. Missed a lot of OTAs with it, missed training camp with it, and then obviously has missed the last 7 or 8 weeks, you know, with this hamstring problem. But if he can come back, that would be big. I mean, just on paper, he would provide some stability because it's been just such a that cornerback room has been just ransacked with injuries and instability there. So to get some stability there with his presence would be big, because last year he started all 17 games and actually had 100 tackles a year ago, and he led all NFL cornerbacks in tackles last year, and he's pretty good in coverage. But that being said, like, if he does hypothetically come back this week, there will be a little bit of a ramp up time, and perhaps maybe he'd have to shake off a little bit of that rust. I don't know. But, you know, that's just one more body out there in terms of depth. Also, another area you'd have to look at maybe perhaps is defensive end. The Colts just don't. They have a lot of guys. They've got 11 different players with a sack this year, but they don't have, you know, we've talked about this before, they don't have like that guy that's going to go out there and get 15 sacks a season, right? When the game's on the line, even though you're going to double team him, he's still going to impact the game. The Colts are still looking for that jump from a Kwity Paye or a Laiatu Latu. I mean, honestly, right now, their most consistent pass rusher is DeForest Buckner, and he's not an edge player. He's a defensive tackle. So I think those are the two areas you look at naturally. But, you know, if the Colts can get, you know, it's cliche, but if you can get better, you get 1% better by making a move and going for it this year. We'll see if they do that. But, yeah, it's a fascinating time, I should say, right now to be a Colts fan and watching the roster mechanics and how they build this team for the last 2 months of the season.
Matt Taylor from the Voice of the Colts with us right now. Jim Coyle, Coach Griff as well. Hey, I'm very interested in the if anybody knows anything about the Colts and Jim Irsay, they know about the Irsay Collection, which is a massive collection of just greatness. It is possibly the greatest collection in the world of its kind, of just a mix of things, musical instruments, a 200-year-old copy of the one of our founding documents, Declaration of Independence, musical instruments from Jimi Hendrix, the Beatles, Prince, Kurt Cobain, Eric Clapton, Muhammad Ali's Rumble in the Jungle championship belt, the saddle used for Secretariat's Triple Crown run. I mean, what it's, and there's more, there's so much more that I don't even know about. It's, Jim Irsay once said that he was offered more than $1 billion for this collection. So, man, Are you going to get yourself anything, Matt?
I don't think anything's going to trickle down my way, but you're right. I mean, it as it relates to just the music part of it, right? Just the guitars. I mean, I don't think it's hyperbole. It is the greatest guitar collection in the world. And he was such a appreciator of rock and roll history and music history. And, you know, he was a great player himself, Jim Irsay, that is. Like he could play, he could strum it, and he could hold his own up there. And but that being said, you know, I think what the daughters of Jim Irsay, you know, Carly, Kaylin, and Casey, what they have acknowledged is that Jim always said front and center that he has to be a steward, not only of the Colts, right? He didn't consider himself an owner of anything. He didn't consider himself an owner of the Colts or the owner of the Jim Irsay collection. The word that he liked to use and preferred to use was a steward. And so I don't think obviously, the daughters have the passion for it that the Jim did. And so now it needs to go into the right hands. And that's what I think this is all about is paying it forward, making sure it goes to places where it can be appreciated further and where it can be, revered in all of the right places. And so they're going to make sure they sell it to the right organizations, the right people, so that the next people can be stewards of all of this history and all of these artifacts and what these things mean and what they represent. So, no question that I saw the collection, gosh, probably half a dozen times, and I mean, you could just get lost in the guitar collection, which I did. I love rock and roll music too. So to just like think about all of the amazing geniuses musically that have touched these instruments that you're getting to see and witness up close and in person yourself is just it's breathtaking. And it's almost like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame came to Indianapolis for a couple of times when the exhibit was out. And I've been to the Rock Hall a couple of times, and same thing. I could spend hours upon hours in there because I love rock and roll and the history of music just as much as Jim Irsay. And so, like, that was, over anything else, that's probably what I bonded with Jim Irsay more than anything else, was just sort of our love for instruments and music. And a lot of our conversations were centered around just those things rather than just football.
Yeah, the there was a selection of that collection that was actually at Indiana University up until last month. I had no idea. Damn it. I would like to have seen that. But it was they have been doing some traveling with those collections. But man, this is going to be it'll take days to auction all this stuff off. I mean, this is not going to be a one-day deal.
It might take years, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just reading one story about when he acquired the Muhammad Ali belt from beating George Foreman in Zaire, the Rumble in the Jungle.
Right.
That bidding went into like 4 a.m. So that's just one piece of this. And I mean, there are hundreds of pieces, right, Matt? Hundreds, you'd probably say.
Oh, yeah, I don't know what the count is. I mean, I do know
I'd like to know how many guitars there are.
Yeah, I like I said, I don't know. All I know is from a blimp view of this thing, there's a warehouse here on the premises of the Colts complex that was built just to house some of these things. And it's not even all of the things, it's just some of the things. And so you're talking about multiple, you know, storage facilities, if you will, that house these things. And again, it was all because he wanted to display it. He didn't want to just have it to say that he had it, you know, to bring over his buddies and smoke a cigar and say, hey, look, there's the whatever it is, like the replica of the Declaration of Independence. No, he wanted to have these things be displayed for the public so that the public could appreciate them and see them and, just take it all in just as much as he did. So, that's what this move is all about for the Irsay family, is getting these things out more and rather than just sitting in a storage facility, and then allowing someone else to be the stewards of all of these artifacts.
Yeah, some of these great guitars. I mean, guitar from Pink Floyd, a bass guitar used by Ringo Starr when the Beatles were first introduced on the Ed Sullivan Show. I mean, these are specific types of incredible things. It's just amazing to me. And here, his more than 200-year-old copy of the Declaration of Independence. Former President Barack Obama to sign it, but Obama felt unworthy and agreed to include a letter instead, which is probably the wise decision, to be honest with you. But what is this hat? This hat that former Texas Governor John Connally was going to present to John F. Kennedy in 1963. Holy shoot.
I mean,
yeah, I mean, gee whiz. The range is what boggles my mind, Matt. And I've known about the collection. It's not that like that this is the first day I've seen it, but the range is incredibly crazy and cool.
Yeah, like I said, it's not just music. It's pop culture. It's history. It's Indiana history. The guy was so well-rounded, and he was a fountain of knowledge, both football and sports and music and history and things that matter to our country. Like, it was
the original manuscript for Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yep. No doubt.
I mean,
no doubt.
Wow. So I know you got to get going and get ready for your weekend. Are you ready for your trip? When do you guys head out?
We are heading out, I think, next Thursday. So it's gonna be a long trip there and long trip back, and hopefully it's sandwiched in between a Colts win against the Falcons.
And with the weekend off, so what's Matt Taylor gonna do? You gonna enjoy some college football?
I'm gonna try and hit you up and see if I can squeeze my way into a seat down at Memorial Stadium and watch IU Wisconsin. So be ready for that phone call that I'm gonna give you here in a couple days.
Well, that's not until November 15th, you know.
Well, I know, but that's our bye week.
Oh, okay. So your guys, that's coming up. Cool.
Yeah.
That'll be no problem, bro. That is never a problem for getting Matt Taylor in. He's like a celebrity. They probably bring you on a helicopter and dropping from a special chair. And in a special chair, that chair that Axl Rose had to use, borrow from those guys when he broke his foot.
No, it's just good to know good people. You know, that's the motto in life, is just surround yourself with the right people.
You're the good people, bro. We appreciate you.
All right, guys, all the best. Have a great weekend coming up.
Appreciate you. Matt Taylor, the voice of the Indianapolis Colts, joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Coach Griff with me, Jim Coyle. We've got more coming up. We're back with it right after we hit this quick break. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Jim Coyle with you. Coach Griff as well. I'm still just – we were – been talking about the Irsay collection that is going up for auction, and I'm still keep reading about all the different stuff, and I think I've done this before. There's just so much you can't remember. And I'm actually reading, you know, he had a great affinity with he wasn't a gigantic Nirvana fan, but because of his addictions and his things in life, he resonated with Kurt Cobain, and one of the reasons why he's got this 1969 Fender guitar used by rocker Kurt Cobain in Nirvana's 1991 Smells Like Teen Spirit music video. I mean, again, specific. Wow, it's crazy. It's crazy. But he's got a guy that's his curator for guitars. It helps, basically helps him find these guitars. It says occasionally Irsay has come to regret missed opportunities. He said his biggest was not shelling out a mere $18,000 for Wilson the volleyball from the Tom Hanks movie Castaway. Wilson! I have to wonder, with all of this stuff, how do you not spend $18,000 to get that damn volleyball?
I know. He was a, you know, that was one of the things that if you didn't really know what Ursay was truly about outside of, like you say, the Colts, his fascination with memorabilia is second to none. You know, it's just an amazing collection of many different items of history. It's crazy.
Yeah. He's got the bass drum from what the Beatles used on that Ed Sullivan show.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Just nuts. He has declined, or he did decline some things that he could have bought. Let's see. He once was offered an opportunity to purchase a number of artifacts that once belonged to Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., including his personal Bible and the room key from the Lorraine Motel where he was assassinated in 1968, and just said, "I cannot buy this. This is meant for a special American museum somewhere. I would not feel comfortable. It's too much for me to be the steward of something like that. It's just too historic." So, yeah, he didn't pick up just everything. He does have Elton John's touring piano from 2021. So there's that. It's crazy. Just all the different stuff. I mean, we could sit here all day if I had a list of it and talk about every, and I'm sure there will be a list, and I cannot wait to see it. There are going to be some major big time buyers. I promise you.
Oh yeah.
Musicians, big time rock musicians are going to go after some of these guitars, but these guitars are not cheap. We're talking multi-millions of dollars.
Yeah.
But they're doing this for charity, which is great. So it's going to be.
That in itself is awesome, because that's going to raise a lot of money.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. So, looking forward to that. Trade deadline. You mentioned that earlier. The 2025 NFL trade deadline hits at 4 p.m. Eastern time. What, this Tuesday?
Yeah, I think it's within the next week. I was just interested to see.
It's on Tuesday, 4 p.m. on Tuesday. My point is, will we ever get to that in college football?
Yeah, you never know. You never know.
I mean, almost. Let's say you have a team that is in the college football playoffs, and this is the quarterfinals. So it's the first round that everybody will be playing, even the top dogs. This is after the first round was played, but this is during the open portal.
Yeah.
Can you enter the portal, go to another team, and play for that team in the playoffs?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a good idea. I mean, why not? I think that's the interesting dynamic. Oh, I know. I mean, it's really crazy, but I would think the provision that would prevent that from happening is being entered in, or enrolled in school and in 12 full credit hours at that institution. That would be the kicker in terms of that being able to be done from that perspective. So it's a interesting concept, let's say that, because of what you said. You know, what if you can even need somebody because they lost somebody from injury? I mean, it's one of those things that I'm sure that their higher powers have probably thought of that concept and whether or not that's a viable option in the future. But we sell she, I guess they would say.
Yeah, Sally sells she sores down by the seashore. We get that one out going on. Yeah, another fun weekend of college football coming. What games are you looking at most?
Oh, man, there's so many of them. I'm interested to see how Vanderbilt does now against, I think they play Missouri this week.
Well, speaking of coaching, what about Vanderbilt's coach?
Yeah.
How does he not get? Well, how does he not get drawn up in this?
Yeah, he's a name that's going to be in the mix and probably is. It's just one of those things that he's being overshadowed by names like Lane Kiffin and things of that magnitude.
Well, Lane Kiffin is probably going, I think he's going to leave this time personally.
But yeah, I think he's eyeing. I think if LSU would approach him, that's the job that he would probably leave for.
Why would they not approach him? Who, well, he has Florida to be did. Number one. Yeah, rumor, but Florida's not.
No, well, LSU rumor has it. He doesn't want the Florida job. They offered like $80 million, and I guess he politely turned it down. But
for
he
how
has,
many years?
I don't know the years on that one. Supposedly, you know, he's got Jimmy Sexton, so he's got one of the best agents out there in terms of providing opportunity. And I would think that LSU would be the more better job in his eyes in terms of potentially winning a national championship, since they've done it before and they're not fighting against, you know, the Miami Hurricanes, the Florida State Seminoles in their own state. You know, LSU is kind of like, that is it. Other than some group of five schools.
USC Nebraska, very interesting game there. Mm-hmm. Both with coaches that have underachieved at their times at their schools. So this is kind of an important game to me, I think. I think one of these coaches has to beat the other to, you know, take a step up, because both of them are looked at, like I just said, and the loser, whoo. Not going to be a good look. Although Nebraska 6-2, USC 5-2. This is, I mentioned it earlier, a CFP defining game. Loser of this out of the CFP hopes. There will be no three lost Big Ten teams in this year.
No.
And so it's very important for to win this game. I think USC gets it done. I don't know that. We'll find out. But I'm looking at the pick'ems on the college pick'ems for ISB. Make sure you get your selections in. Vanderbilt, Texas, one of the picks, man. That's a tough pick. Normally I would go with Vanderbilt. I'm not a big fan of Texas this year, but they're at home and I think they bounce back.
Well, Archie is in concussion protocol, so he's probably not playing.
I'm glad I forgot about that. So I just switched my pick.
Saved you a buck.
Yeah. Vanderbilt goes to Texas and gets that win. First of all, that completely knocks Texas out of any conversation regarding the college football playoffs, in my opinion. And it firmly entrenches Vanderbilt into the college football playoff.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't think
maybe they would be. People are still going to think Ole Miss and Georgia are ahead of Vanderbilt, but Vanderbilt wins that game. Man, they're going to climb.
Yeah, I mean, Vandy's what, 19th right now overall. They have their remaining schedule, of course.
They're nine. They're number nine.
Right. They have Texas, Auburn, Kentucky, Tennessee. So you got to think that they
could lose a game, and they can lose a game.
Yeah,
they're 7-1.
The best thing about their next two games after this one, they're both at home against Auburn and Kentucky, and they go to Tennessee, which is the big rivalry game, and that could be for them getting a shot in the playoffs. You know, that's kind of a remarkable thing to think of because of what Clark Lee's done as well. I mean, he's kind of done, you know, a little different than Sig in that regard, but it just goes to show you how important the quarterback position is on any team. You know, you've got to have a productive guy at that spot. And, you know, it's being shown over and over again. I mean, the kid at Mississippi, and his name's escaping me at this point, but he was at Division II Ferris State a year ago. And look what he's doing at Ole Miss now. I mean, it's incredible. But you know, that's credit to Lane having the, you know, the eye of that, you know, looking at that kid and saying, I don't care if he's a Division II. He looks like a Division I athlete. And he shows it, and he has. So, I mean, he's been remarkable for them.
Yeah, the SEC goes nine deep with teams with two losses or less. Mm-hmm. And you go back up here to the Big Ten, and that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's six deep. So there's a difference between the SEC and the Big Ten. They appear to be a little deeper, but I'm not sure that that's actually true. The Washington Huskies, 6-2. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't see them. They're 6-2, so there's another one. And they should be ranked, in my opinion, as well as the Iowa Hawkeyes. Iowa's 6-2. They're 4-1 in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. Are they not ranked?
Yeah, I know. That was some of the, criticism this week in the AP and coaches poll, that you do not have ranked Washington or Iowa, and both have had
SEC bias. That's because they've got so many SEC teams in that are ranked. And I'm not saying that they're not, you know, good, decent teams, but I'm not, but I think Washington and Iowa are as good. And it's, again, it's perception. It's perception. People think this, they think that these SEC mm-hmm. teams are what they are. Why do you think that?
Right.
Because you that's been that way in the past.
Right.
That does not make it that way today. And so,
well, you know, Alabama and Georgia have had such a tenure as that, you know, beacon of greatness on in the SEC. And there's a, you know, I guess that too has been a reason. But the big game this week, in my another big game this week in the Big Ten that I'm interested in, is Oregon at Iowa. Because Oregon's number 6, they go into Iowa City to take on the Hawkeyes in an environment is just as difficult as their own home environment. So that one, to me, is kind of interesting, because I think Iowa's defense has got the capabilities to control Oregon offense, their offense.
Well, Iowa, one of the teams that, although they're not ranked right now, I still think that they have CFP hopes. They're 6-2. If they win this game against Oregon, who's number 6, they definitely get ranked, and mm-hmm. they would be 7-2. Yeah. So, and 5-1 in the Big Ten Conference. You've got to consider them for the college football playoffs, but how much harm would that do to Oregon? That would put them at 7-2. I think that would leave them in the CFP, but it would put them on the doorstep to where
it would,
boom, you could be knocked out.
It would hurt Indiana's win at Oregon if they were to lose at Iowa, because it wouldn't be viewed as a, you know, as good a win as it is as right now.
It's Iowa going, I mean, Oregon going on the road to play at a place like Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
That is pretty tough place to play.
We know it's tough.
Yeah. But I think that this is going to be I don't know how this game comes out.
No, I think it's going to be a really good ball game.
Is Dante Moore still beat up?
I don't know that. I haven't seen anything that would tell me the answer to that question. Not to say that they're going to publish it out there, but Iowa goes, they play Oregon this week, then they play at USC, home against Michigan State, and then on the road at Nebraska. And if you think about it, like you just said, if they would win out, let's just say, that gives them a beat of a top 10 and a top 25 team. Very similar to Indiana in that regard, because Indiana's beat a top 10 and a top 25 team. So, you know, Iowa will more than likely have a ranking and could move up quite extensively if they win the next two games against ranked opponents.
Well, Notre Dame is definitely going to make it in, I think. I just, it's always hard to keep them out because it's Notre Dame, but I think they're going to slide by with those two losses and manage the rest of their season and get their little piece of the pie again.
Well, they lost an A&M by one at home. I mean, that we can say A&M is a very good team, and they lost on the road to Miami in Miami. So I guess when you look at it and say those two losses, you know, you never want to say are good losses, but they at least lost to teams that were ranked. In Miami at the time was probably in the top five.
Oh, they were maybe number two at that time, yeah. I think. I can't remember. But, yeah, looking at the AP poll right now, to consider this a precursor of the college football playoff, who's going to make it in and who's not. Ohio State, Indiana from the Big Ten for sure. Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia, Oregon, Ole Miss, Georgia Tech from the ACC, Vanderbilt. We're only at nine spots down, and I've already called the name of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 SEC teams in the top nine.
Yeah, and they've all got one loss, don't they?
Oh, yeah, or less.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, they all have one loss, except for A&M. A&M still undefeated.
Yeah, A&M still undefeated, correct.
So, yeah, BYU probably will make it in from the Big 12. They're in the Big 12 conference, right? Yeah. They currently lead Big 12 conference 5-0. They're 8-0 overall. Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
You got Texas Tech. The Big 12 is not going to get three bids in, but boy.
Cincinnati's playing really well as in
Cincinnati Sorsby. Cincinnati is underranked.
Yeah. Sorsby's had a heck of a year.
Oh, hell yeah, he has. Brendan Sorsby, the former IU quarterback, has led the Bearcats to a 7-1 record. Right now, they sit tied for the conference lead. So
yeah,
they could still make it in.
Yeah, they could go to the championship game and win it.
Hey, fancy this. Texas Tech, ranked 13th right now, one spot out of the golden top 12, if this were the CFP poll.
Right.
But you know what? Hey, let's take a quick break before we get into that. We've got to take one last break. Appreciate you guys being with us. Indiana Sports Beat Radio, Jim Coyle and Coach Griff with you. Back with more after these. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Jim Coyle with you as always. Coach Griff as well on this Thursday heading into another spectacular sports weekend. And, boy, this Big 12 is going to get interesting. I don't see them getting three bids, but BYU and Cincinnati currently tied at the top at 5-0 with Texas Tech right behind them. Mm-hmm. Texas Tech, one of the hot teams going. But like I said in a little bit earlier, they're ranked 13th right now. And I don't see the Big 12 getting three bids, although I think those three teams might be deserving, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Texas Tech's down to their second team quarterback, if I'm not mistaken. They lost their number one guy. But this guy that's come on and is kind of just held serve, and they've won with him. Cincinnati, you talk about finishing up with a schedule. They're at Utah this weekend. Then they have Arizona coming in. BYU comes in on the 22nd. And then Cincinnati finishes on the road at TCU. So they've got a long way to haul with some of these teams coming up, because you can see they're playing three ranked teams.
Texas Tech is not going to make it in.
So
I think Cincinnati shocks everybody, upsets BYU at the Big 12 championship game, and makes it in. I don't know that they get two bids. Will they get two bids from the Big 12? And the only reason I say that, not that they're not deserving, they are. But I start looking, just using the top 20, AP top 25 as a template. You know, you're only getting 12 teams in. Well, you look, Ohio State, Indiana, in Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia, Oregon is a team that they're not solidly in yet. They are right now, but if they lose at Iowa,
they're in jeopardy.
Yeah, because the Big 12, I'm going to be honest with you, the Big 12 may take that fourth spot from the Big 10. It's possible. It depends on what Oregon does. You know, who, but there has to be a Big 10 team that rises up to take that. And I think that Oregon needs to beat Iowa. If USC wants to get in, they've got to win that game against Nebraska to get that spot to keep things rolling. But it's going to get fun these last few weeks. And especially, when does the damn...
I think it's the first ranking comes out Monday.
Okay, boy, we're going to have some fun stuff to talk about then.
Yeah, it's usually...
But I expect it to be what I see right now from the AP Top 25. Georgia Tech is the first non-SEC Big Ten team at 8th, and they would be the ACC representative. But then you've got Miami in the 10th spot. Does the ACC get 10 teams in? Are you going to keep Georgia Tech and Miami both out?
Well, right now, Georgia Tech would be in my opinion. And I would think that Miami's in.
Even yeah, right now.
Lost to Louisville. But it'll be interesting to see how the, let's just say Indiana and Ohio State hold serve, they win this weekend. And it'll be interesting to see how the committee ranks those two teams. Because if you look at their resumes, Indiana has the better signature wins at this point, beating two top 10 teams, beating Oregon and then Illinois. When they came in, they were ranked 9th, and Oregon was ranked 2nd when they beat them. So, and who has Ohio State beat? I mean, the Texas win. Okay.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the year, doesn't look so
good. That's why I think Indiana's the number one team in the country.
And that's what I'm getting at, to see how this college football playoff committee ranks it on that their resume. Because
that would be hilarious, but I cannot imagine them
having
the cojones to do that.
They're going to have to explain it other than, well, we look at it, you know, the eye test passes at Ohio State. They're the defending national champion. Okay. Then don't tell us signature wins matter, because by that framework that you just stated, it has no bearing on the ranking. And so that will be interesting, because what will happen with the, you
know, especially if Texas were to lose this week at home to Vanderbilt.
Right. You know, what does 3 through 11 look like for the Power Four teams? Because the 12th spot.
Has Ohio State beat a ranked team besides Texas?
No.
And if they lose that game this week, Texas drops out of the top 25.
Yeah. I'd have to look. I think Texas is the only win at the beginning of the year that was, you would say, is a quote unquote signature win, because how high Texas was rated at the time, because I think they were 3rd in the country. So yeah, it'll be interesting. That's why we love it.
That's right. Well, have fun with it, man. I cannot thank everybody enough. Thanks, Coach. Thanks to Dustin Schutte, Matt Taylor as well. Most importantly, each and every one of you. Without you, we have no reason to be here. We're back tomorrow. Tonight, Hoosier Tailgate with Coach, 7:30. Go to thehoosier.com. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.